Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our sex podcast collective, visit PleasurePodcasts.com.
Today's episode of Holly Randall Unfiltered is brought to you by Twisties. Twisties is my longest running client. I've been shooting for them for over a decade, and they are also the best site for lesbian erotica on the web. You know, on this show, we talk a lot about ethical porn and consent and boundaries. Let me tell you that when I shoot for Twisties, we cover all of those topics, and you can rest assured that you are definitely accessing the most ethically produced porn out there. I, as the producer and the director, make sure of that. So check out twisties.com, where you can access the hottest girl-girl scenes out there with big stars like Abella Danger, Demi Sutra, Kira Noir, Cherie DeVille, and Alexis Fox, plus up-and-coming newcomers like Jules Blue, Lulu Chu, Alexis Tay, Charlotte Sins, Giselle Blanco, and so many more. Go to twisties.com today. You will not regret it. Hi, I'm Holly Randall, and welcome to my podcast, Holly Randall Unfiltered. This is a show about sex, the adult industry, and the people in it. I'm a 21-year veteran of this fascinating little industry, and as the eldest child of the trailblazing erotic photographer Suze Randall, you could say I grew up in it. So forget everything you think you know about porn, because this show is going to change your mind. My guests are some of the biggest names in the industry, and we unabashedly reveal the real behind-the-scenes stories. The funny, the inspiring, the tragic, and the bizarre. Everyone has an opinion about sex work, but few people actually listen to the sex workers. So sit back and prepare yourself for a podcast which is honest, raw, and unfiltered. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Holly Randall Unfiltered. My guest today has had an incredible journey. She's been in the porn industry for just over a year when she suffered a stroke and had to have heart surgery. But she didn't let that step back stop her impressive career, both on screen and behind the camera. She's been nominated for so many awards, including Hottest Inked Star and Alt Porn Female Performer of the Year. Welcome to the show, Misha Montana.
Hello, everybody. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited. I've been looking forward to this for a long time.
Oh, good. Well, I'm looking forward to talking about, just as you came in the door, all these interesting things came up. The first thing that we started discussing about, which is not on my list of questions, but I feel like we need to get into this because I want to make sure that you tell me all about this, is the deathmatch wrestling that you just did that is responsible for that little cut that we see on your head right now.
Yes. Well, it's kind of funny that you even noticed it, because I'm like, I have to address it at some point. It was a lot bigger a few days ago, but I'm actually part of a wrestling promotion called XPW. It's Extreme Pro Wrestling. And I got into it because I was a valet for one of the wrestlers who's actually the king of the deathmatch.
So what does that mean?
It's deathmatch wrestling is, it's like, you know, your typical, you know, WWE or AEW. They're trained professional wrestlers, but they use weapons, like obscure weapons. In this particular case, I was hit in the head with a light tube. Like a fluorescent, like a light tube you would use in your kitchen, or in their glass, you know, it's real glass. So they hit each other with light tubes and roll around in thumbtacks, and they'll cut each other. There was a guy that used a syringe through someone's face. It's so violent. It's extremely violent. And people think it's fake. Like, I showed you the picture. I was, like, covered in blood.
Covered in blood. I thought that it looks like a Halloween costume.
It did. And that's what, like, people thought, too. They're like, oh, she just, like, poured a bunch of fake blood on her head. I'm like, No, that's like my own blood. Like yeah. There was nothing fake about that.
And head wounds bleed excessively.
Bleed. Like I was actually kind of like when it happened and I felt it on my face, I'm like, God, I hope this isn't like too much. Like I hope I'm not bleeding from my head out, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and it's dangerous. It really is. But I love it. It's such like a rush for me. Like it takes performance art to an entirely different level too.
Now you said you were a valet. What does that mean?
It's basically like an escort for the wrestler. Like you are their manager in a sense. You just walk out with them and kind of escort them out to the ring. And you have minor storyline roles. But my role developed really quickly in that to where I ended up being more involved in the promotions. And I ended up being more physical. We've had a few cat fights. With Veronica St. Clair and or Veronica Kane and Jasmine St. Clair. So we've had little tuffs here and there. And I wanted to take it to the next level physically because I wanted to show the fans that I could do it and do something as crazy as that. And no one was expecting me to actually bleed ever. I don't think they ever expected me to, especially 6 months in to a promotion.
Okay, so this is legal, I assume.
It is, somehow.
How? Yeah, like, what's the insurance on that?
God, that's I can't even imagine. I mean, and it's crazy to watch. Like, you're watching it, and you're just like, this cannot be real. I think it, like, helps people to kind of, like, internalize it and digest it when you are like, no, there's no way that's real. It's entertaining to some people. It's harder for me. Like, when I first watched them on TV, I couldn't watch it. Yeah. It's just, like, too much. It was, like, so disgusting to me. But when you're there and in it, you have to go in person. I recommend going in person.
Yeah.
Because then you get the whole, you're like, no, never.
Ever going to go to that.
It's brutal. Like, you have to have a certain mindset.
Yeah.
Like, you have to be a certain type of person to be into that, for sure. I love it. I'm obsessed with it. But I'm into, like, I love it. Like, the blood and just, like, aesthetically how it looks, too. Like, when with my blonde hair, like, when I got all bloody, I'm just, like, genuinely happy. I was backstage like, here I am bleeding from the head and people are like, are you all right? I'm like, I'm great. This is awesome. I mean,
the adrenaline rush must be crazy.
Oh yeah, it is. It's like a whole, you don't even feel it too at that point. Like, people are like, how do you do that? Doesn't it hurt? Like, I mean, eventually, yeah, I hurt more right now than I did 3 days ago. So I'm lucky that they didn't scar up my face more than.
So yeah, I mean, you said syringes, like, I mean, has anybody ever gotten, like, seriously, seriously injured from this?
People have died from death matches. People have died in the wrestling world, you know, just from regular wrestling. It's dangerous what they do. But, you know, knock on wood, surprisingly so, it's not as, like, common as you would think, especially considering some of the stuff that they do. But they're as trained as they can be. For the most part, obviously using like weapons like that, there's not a whole lot of training that goes into it. You just hope that you're hitting the right places. David Arquette, actually, remember him?
Yeah, the screen guy.
He got into wrestling and he got stabbed in the throat because they did it wrong. And he was bleeding from the jugular and has his like hand on his throat and he was bleeding to death. Like, and he like caught himself because it's a performance. He left the ring because he's bleeding out. He knew he nicked something. And he turned around and went back in to finish the match.
Wow.
And that's how, like, you know, they are dedicated to this, that level.
So, all right. I'm sorry. I can't, like, wrap my fucking brain around this.
It's so obscure, I know.
I didn't know that this existed. So you say that there's training and you said that somebody stabbed him in the throat wrong. Yeah. I'm assuming that there's some training around the appropriate places to impale somebody.
Right. And like, you know, a lot of it too is kind of like common sense. And, you know, a way they're not trying to like really hurt each other, you know, for the most part, there are some people that are probably trying to hurt you, but there's a respect between opponents, you know, it's just like any other event. It should be, especially with something that personal too, where they're so close to all these vital organs and things, like, you're not trying to hurt somebody, and everything that they're doing, they are okay with, you know, or they want, or they're communicating in some ways that people wouldn't even realize. So, you know, it's not just like an all out brawl. Like, we're going to go out and I'm going to try to stab you to death. Like, that's not how it is at all. It's, you know, it's executed in a way that that doesn't happen for the most part, but accidents happen. It's just like anything else. It's like hockey, you know, they get their throat slit from weights. Like,
Yeah, my husband plays hockey.
Oh, does he? See, yeah. Hockey is brutal too. Brutal. Like watching hockey matches, I'm like, man.
And the fighting is like the part that everybody loves the most.
Yeah. Oh, it's crazy. I wanted to play hockey when I was in second grade.
Yeah.
And my dad was like, no chance.
No, my husband's totally going to teach my daughter how to play hockey.
Oh, no way. Yeah. Good for you. Yeah. I love it. I think it's great. But it's brutal. Like, it I don't know brutal. How people just, they just love it. But then people wonder, like, I'm nuts for liking, you know, wrestling. And then I watch hockey. I'm like, this is so brutal.
I mean, but they're like padded and stuff like that. Like, to be fair, like there's some protection going on there, but
there's none.
There's none. Like people don't wear like bulletproof vests or.
Definitely not. They're like shirtless for the most part. Like they're just all out. Like you have to have a certain like mindset to even want to do something like that for sure.
Yeah.
I love it. I think we're nuts, but I think everyone thinks that too.
Do you think that it's actually like a good outlet for people who have like a lot of pent up aggression or anger to get it out in like a healthy, consensual way?
Yeah, I really do. I think that, you know, physical sports like that, especially ones that are, you know, more like aggressive and mm-hmm. brutal and physically violent like mm-hmm. that, I think it is a good outlet because who knows, like if you like are having those kind of feelings and you know you're raging out like that in a ring, what would you be doing if you weren't mm-hmm. there? So I think it is like a healthy expression too, and it really mostly is like an artistic expression for the most part, mm-hmm. but it is a very physical expression too.
Yeah.
And you know, I think a lot of it too is there's so much pain incorporated into it. It's almost like a BDSM kind of parallel mm-hmm. in a way, like you almost enjoy that pain and it's kind of a release. At least in my opinion, I think that's part of it. I don't know because I can't speak for a lot of the other people involved, but I could see that being kind of playing into that a little bit.
Yeah, I know that totally makes sense.
Which is why I like it. I mean, I'm into, you know, that kind of pain pleasure relationship. Yeah. So I can see that playing a role also. That would be my suspicion.
Yeah. How do they choose the weapons? And I'm assuming the weapons have to be approved by a board or something like that.
Well, I mean,
because you can't come in there with like a fucking club with a bunch of nails in it.
You could. Oh, Jesus Christ. You could. Fans will bring weapons like that they make. And I'm like, that stuff I don't trust because I'm like, I don't know. Like, I mean, the fans are great. Love the fans. But like, you don't know what somebody did to them. You don't know. Like somebody brought to one of the shows like a pinata with a bunch of razor blades in it. Like that's sketchy stuff, you know?
Yeah.
They really, if you think of it, they probably put it through their body, like skewers, like long skewers. They like shove them in your head. And I don't do that. That's not my level, but like it's gnarly what they do.
But I assume, okay, so the other contestant has to approve the weapons, right? Like you can't, like two people are fighting each other. So do they approve it like at the event before it starts, or is there a communication beforehand?
There's communication for sure.
Okay. So they're like, hey, I'm going to bring a fucking machete. And the other person's like, that's cool.
That's a little much. Yeah.
Or that's.
You're like, that's a little much. They like weed whack each other sometimes. Like,
wait, with like a weed whacker with a motor?
Oh yeah,
get the fuck out of here!
I know, it's crazy. Like I'm telling you, anything you think of that could be used as a weapon that's like dangerous, they probably have used it.
No chainsaws.
I don't know about chainsaws. They might have used chainsaws, but I think chainsaws are too much.
Yeah,
weed whacker is a little smaller. It's not, we're not going through the log, we're going through like the brush, you know.
Yeah.
No, it's but still, like, who wants to get intentionally cut by a weed whacker? Nobody.
Well, clearly somebody does. Yeah. Because otherwise this wouldn't exist.
Small percentage of people want to get whacked by a weed whacker.
That's like, nuts. Okay, so how like big are these events? How many fans are generally there?
They're usually, you know, a couple hundred, few hundred people there. The pay-per-views sell like crazy though. Like in-person events, usually like a few hundred, but I can't even imagine like thousands and thousands and thousands that they sell on pay-per-views. So people are watching it from home. It's definitely like it's an indie promotion, so it's smaller, way smaller than the main, and it's obviously a niche thing.
Yeah.
So it's not appealing to everybody. Like it's not a mainstream appeal. But it has like a really large fan base and it's very like cult-like, mm-hmm. you know, like everybody, they're really into it.
Oh,
like,
I can imagine.
And it's awesome. Like I'd say like wrestling fans compared to like porn fans, because like, I thought porn fans were like, they're serious, they're obsessive. But wrestling fans are rabid. Like and they're so connected to it. Like it's just like porn. And there's a lot of parallels between porn mm-hmm. and wrestling, like mm-hmm. if you think about it in a lot mm-hmm. of ways. So to have that comparatively, like fan base wise, it's really interesting because these fans are like diehard. If they hate you, they hate you. And but if they love you, like, it's amazing. So these fans are incredible. And because it means so much to them too, mm-hmm. you know, and wrestling fans are like that. Like, you either get it or you don't at all,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
but if you get it, you have like loyalty forever
yeah.
with these people. So, and I love it. I'm obsessed with it.
It's interesting that like you're straddling these two worlds that appeal to like our most animalistic and, to be fair, strongest instincts, mm-hmm. violence and sex.
Yeah, 100%.
So what are the parallels that you see between them and how are they different maybe?
Well, you know, I've always seen it as like one degree of separation between the two where mm-hmm. we, you know, we were both in these worlds that are fantasy worlds. Everybody is a character. I relate a lot to the wrestlers and the wrestling community because I understand what it's like to be a fictional character mm-hmm. for the most part. You know, some people are not, but for the most part, mm-hmm. right? You know, you're playing a role, a fantasy role. And, you know, you have this struggle with identity a lot too, where mm-hmm. you have a real life. You know, you're a human being, but yet you're supposed to be this figure all the time. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, wrestling is one of those worlds where it's like the most relatable in any kind of a professional sport or anything really. I mean, other than obviously like actors and actresses, mm-hmm. but they get to like maintain a lot of their, you know, privacy and they can separate from their roles where we can't. There's a blur between our real self and our fictitious self. So, you know, there's a lot of parallels there, but it ultimately, like, it's a performance. And you have a lot of people that can't separate performance from reality. So it's interesting. I think there's more similarities than there are differences in that world too. Highly physical, mm-hmm. Physically demanding, emotionally, mentally demanding, mm-hmm. Stigmatized in some ways. Obviously, wrestling's more widely accepted socially mm-hmm. than the adult community, but there's a lot there. And I think it's kind of interesting when you combine the two worlds too, which is mm-hmm. what this promotion does, combines the two. So brilliant, in my opinion. And if you think about it, it makes sense, but you would probably never put those two eggs in the same basket, like mm-hmm. if you weren't actually, you know, familiar with either world. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of an interesting thing to watch.
Why do you think the public has an issue like separating the character from the persona in sex work and in like wrestling versus, because you compared it to acting before. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that there is that struggle to like separate those things?
I think it's investment in the characters. You know, I think people are so desperately looking for an escape, especially these days. You know, we live in such a hostile, negative world, and seeing people like us or seeing these, you know, and wrestlers are like, they're built like Greek gods for the most part. They're superheroes, like especially to children, you know, they're a figure that it's a living, breathing fantasy. It's obtainable mm-hmm. in a sense where like you see movies, you're like, I'm in love. You know, you can get obsessive about certain fantasy, you know, even like science fiction storylines and characters. But we're physical representations of something potentially attainable too. Mm. And I think that people like fall in love with that idea. You know, there's a hope there that they can relate to, or, you know, it kind of embodies like their fantasy, mm-hmm. just living, breathing, walking fantasy for them. So I think that attachment is greater, especially like I was comparing it to, it's different than a football team because it's like, you know, people are diehard loyal fans to their teams, but we're like individual characters with stories, with mm-hmm. personalities, with social media presences, with things that they can follow all day, every day. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the fan base gets deeper and more connected because you are an individual. Mm-hmm. And even if you are just that character, I think that's why they have a hard time separating the two because they don't want to. Mm-hmm. I think when you know, and I've been cautioned to this before, not to share too much, to give it too much reality for fans. I honestly disagree because I think my fans like that about me, I would hope. But I can see why it wouldn't be endearing. You know, they want the fantasy. They want you to be what they see on the screen. And to them, that's what matters. So, but it's difficult because at the end of the day, you are human. That's why so many people, wrestlers and porn people alike, you have mental health problems, you have substance abuse problems, you have identity crisis, like at some point or multiple times in your life.
Yeah.
Because of that, you know, you're treated a certain way and viewed as this object, you know, this fantasy figure, but you're a human at the end of the day, whether they want to acknowledge that or not.
It's been interesting because I've seen feedback specific to that actually on this podcast. And I've had so many people tell me, your show humanizes adult stars. There's one side that says, I can't watch this girl's porn anymore because now I see her as a person. And like, you've ruined it for me. Sorry. Then there's other people who become more of a fan because they're like, I didn't know that she had these depths to her. Mm-hmm. I relate to her on all of these things. I see her as a person now. I'm an even greater fan. So yeah. It's kind of interesting. And I think that also separates out the two different kinds of fans. And I think that the rise of OnlyFans and other personal content platforms has really illustrated this. There are some people that truly like watch porn because they just want to get off. They want to mm-hmm. masturbate. They want to like blow their loads so they don't get prostate cancer. You should masturbate good frequently for yes, to not get do. Prostate cancer. It's important to get that sperm out. Just say
it out.
True.
Get it all out.
And then there's people that are truly looking for a connection mm-hmm. with somebody else. And I think sex workers, because they also like put themselves in this vulnerable position of like showing themselves to the world. And now that people have access to them through the internet, they feel this connection with these people. Mm-hmm. I think also too, especially since it's more difficult for men to have sexual relations than it is for women. And it's 100%. Been really interesting for me to talk to some fans that are, you know, who hire like full service sex workers mm-hmm. or, you know, do in-person sex work or are just like big fans of whoever and support them on OnlyFans and order lots of customs, et cetera. And, you know, they've provided really interesting insight into like, I have a hard time having relationships with women sometimes. Some of them are married mm-hmm. and they have a hard time connecting with their wife and they feel like they're getting a connection through these women and there's not that judgment that they fear and they experience with like the dating pool.
Right. Well, and you know, I think that that brings up, you know, the biggest human issue is that we're all looking for a connection.
Yeah.
And more than ever, we lack it mm-hmm. in every way. You know, with technology and social media and these apps for crying out loud. I mean, you can't even meet somebody organically or in person anymore. And half the time you talk to someone online, you meet them in person. You're like, this isn't even like the connection I thought it would be. It's awkward because we've, you know, unfortunately as a species gone into this weird thing where we crave that connection and we have to have a physical connection with human beings. We're meant to, we're biologically engineered to have that connection. And I think the problem, you combine that problem with this stigma around sex and the human body in general, and then especially, you know, sex work where it's so taboo and frowned upon and especially, you know, religiously or whatever it may be. And again, you are at the end of the day, a biological sexual being. We're all products of sex. Most of us will have sex at some point in our lives. So to shy away from that and to shun it, to shame it, that creates these issues when we should be having open discussions and education and, you know, acknowledging that we're all human beings. We all have these urges and desires and how to deal with them in a healthy and appropriate way. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just lacking all across the board, but that desire and that need is there. So it makes our job and sex workers alike that much more valuable too, mm-hmm. Because the services that we provide are essential, mm-hmm. you know, to, you know, maintaining that humanity, whether it be connection or physical, you know, physical or emotional or whatever it may be, just talking to someone, you know, can be a connection.
Yeah.
So I think we desperately need more of that connection and more of that education, probably more than ever.
Yeah. I think about this one particular, I think he's a Patreon member. I know he was at least for a while, but I don't know if he still is. And we had this interesting discussion about, you know, you hear that so often, like, oh my God, why do you watch porn? Like, you're so pathetic. You subscribe to this girl's whatever platform, go get yourself a real girlfriend. And this guy was like, I'm handicapped. I'm in a wheelchair. Right. He's like, how easy do you think it is for me to date? Yeah. He's like, I can't meet women. Women don't want to date me. I know it's very easy for the able-bodied man who doesn't necessarily have such a hard time dating. But like for me, this is very hard for me, and sex workers provide a really valuable yeah. service for me. And yes, I'm paying them for their time, but it doesn't mean that I don't feel that they care for me. I have a therapist. I pay her for her time, but that doesn't mean she doesn't care about me.
Right.
But that's her job.
Yeah. No, that's an interesting point too. It's like, and you know, why are we so eager to judge other people for, you know, something that they're doing in a responsible and healthy way for their own well-being and mm-hmm. happiness, you know? But people that say things like that, they probably aren't getting as much pussy as they're, you know, letting on to, for one.
Yeah.
It must be so easy for you having pussy thrown your way 24/7, especially yeah. when you talk to people like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, insecurities and all these other things. But it's just, that just goes into the whole thing of, it's a necessary service for people. Like, and it shouldn't be shamed. Like, yeah. I think that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And for somebody to feel that way, to feel loved and appreciated, whether it's paid for or not, it's real to them. Mm-hmm. And that experience is valuable. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, those experiences should be celebrated and not shunned or judged or shamed in any way.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's also this idea, if there's a monetary exchange there, then the service that's provided isn't genuine.
Right.
Which is, I think, a weird thing. Like, I'm paid to do photo shoots by
doesn't
clients.
Mean
that
like
doesn't
it.
Mean I don't love it.
Yeah,
doesn't mean
exactly.
that, like, I'm not enjoying myself and like I'm passionate
forced
and I'm committed.
To do it.
Yeah. But like, this is, I mean, we live in a capitalistic society. Like, we need to make
right.
a living
yeah.
so that we can like pay our bills, because
right.
unfortunately, you know, shit ain't free.
Right.
So if you decide to make a living by providing intimacy, such, you know, coordination with other people, like, yeah, why are we so quick to jump to that and to shame that?
Yeah, it shouldn't be. And it's, you know, prostitution is the oldest profession in the yeah. world, you know? So, no, I really think that we need to have more open conversations, and especially going into legal conversations, you know, mm-hmm. we'll see what happens in the near future, but we're potentially looking at some seriously aggressive anti-sex legislation coming
yeah.
forward. So these are problems too, that, you know, people are like, oh, well, I don't hire prostitutes. Why do I care? But you'd be surprised, like, how many people within your community are, we're all part of an ecosystem that you are also a part of. I mean, mm-hmm. and if you strip away our rights and you don't think that it's going to happen to you, you are very wrong.
Yeah. I mean, it's a slippery slope.
It is, like, and censorship in general, you know, it's like you root for somebody to get censored that you don't agree with or happen to like, but be careful doing such things, because it's dangerous and problematic for everyone.
Yeah.
When that overreach starts happening, because, you know, it's all fine and great when somebody you don't like gets hit with it. Well, it's two-sided. It doesn't just,
yeah.
you know, leave you alone. So, no, I think, you know, legalizing sex work nationally should be a priority. That's always been my opinion on it. I think it should be safe and regulated. And it's just like marijuana. You know, remember the anti-weed campaigns? Mm-hmm. Like, holy, you will smoke and die or murder your whole family. And now it's like,
remember the DARE campaign?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. My God. Yeah.
That didn't work.
Yeah. Like, they're like, you're going to take ecstasy and it's going to burn a hole through your head and you will croak on the floor. And then you take ecstasy and you're like, I didn't die.
Yeah.
You
and
know?
And it completely, like, eliminates.
It undermines
everything that
you told you. So
yeah.
that's why, like, having education, like, not this, like, fear-mongering based
yeah.
like structure. It's like, have an honest, like, conversation. Like, honestly, you're gonna love this shit, but just don't get addicted to it. It
yeah.
is dangerous, you know.
Yeah.
But like, why lie and try to, because it's same with sex. Like, don't have sex, you're gonna get AIDS, you're gonna, you know,
yeah.
all these things. Like, it's like, okay, well, you have sex, right?
Mm-hmm.
That you've had sex, so how do you sit there and say it? It just totally undermines their agenda completely. If anything, it pushes people into like a more radical, like, side potentially,
yeah.
because now you're like, well, fuck this. If everything they said was, you know, untrue about that, then it's probably untrue in other ways too.
Yeah.
So, and that's where you create recklessness too, you know, that defiant recklessness. So mm-hmm. I think education is the most important thing, and we're seriously lacking it in
yeah.
many ways.
Amen. All right. We're going to take a quick break so I can educate you on my sponsors and things that you should buy to support this show.
Buy it all up.
So hang tight, guys. We'll be right back.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
We all know Adam and Eve is the one-stop shop for everything sexy. And now, with my code Holly, you can get any one item for 50% off, plus 10 free gifts. And you'll even get free shipping. So spice up your sex life at adamandeve.com, but only if you use code Holly.
All right, guys, we are back. So let's do your origin story. We got to deal with every guest. How did you get into porn?
You know, I started in the adult industry when I was 18. Mm-hmm. I started modeling, doing fetish modeling mostly. Started in the BDSM community. And I was in and out, like, not seriously committed to actual, like, film porn, like, hardcore porn. For about 10 years. Like, I actually got into it and decided to do it when I was 29. And then COVID obviously came around, and that was a lovely experience for all of us, of course. But I've actually only been in the industry now for almost 2 years, mm-hmm. which it seems like so much longer. I've been in and out of adult for about 11. Mm-hmm. But yeah, industry, I've only been in about 2 years, which is wild. Considering all the things that have happened in 2 years.
Wow.
It's crazy.
Wow. And so how, like, what was your transition into doing, like, what you're doing now into film? So did you not shoot your first porn scene until 29?
Yeah. Okay. I didn't shoot my first porn. Yeah. Porn scene was when I was 29. And I was already 29 years old. I mean, that's when most people, like, would be retiring, essentially. So, and everybody thought I was crazy for doing that. Luckily, in this new world that we have with the internet, like, the genres just kind of are limitless. Mm-hmm. So it worked in my favor in a lot of ways. And I tried to get an agent. I didn't know how to do it. I mean, how, you know, like, when, you know, the people that DM you all day, get me into porn, please help me into porn. I don't even know how I got into it, to be honest, because I was trying to email, call, reach out to agents. I didn't know anyone in the industry for the most part. You know, I didn't have any connections. I didn't know what to do. So I did it the old fashioned way and started emailing people and finding their contact information, DMing them, to 95% of which were unanswered. Or told no. Mm-hmm. Every single agency that I tried to get with in the beginning, and I had far less tattoos at that time, mm-hmm. was not interested because of my age and because of my tattoos. And then Alterotic, I emailed. And I was like, that was kind of the last one I was going to do. I'm like, you know what? I really wanted to do this. I gave it the best effort that I could. This is kind of it. Like, I'm exhausted from trying at this point. So I was feeling really defeated when I sent that email. And the next morning, 7 a.m., I jumped on a 3-hour long phone call with Ivan, and the rest of that is history. I ended up shooting my first scene with them, with Sasha Inc., which was amazing. And I ended up, now I'm their production manager and only female director, writer, producer. So it's great. I'm kind of the unofficial contract star as well. So mm-hmm. It's great. I've gotten so many opportunities with them. I love being with them and representing them. So I was blessed in that sense, you know. Mm-hmm. I was given the gift of opportunity, and I just wanted to show everybody that I could do it, and I think we're doing it. So.
Yeah. So yeah, you're obviously, like, inked, mm-hmm. pretty well inked. I actually keep staring
at this one. That, I know this is the one everybody likes.
That
too.
One is
so,
like,
crazy.
Really beautiful.
It's crazy.
It's incredibly
it's
well
amazing
done.
Amazing what they can do.
Yeah.
I'm not an artist myself, not in that way.
Speaking of incredible tattoos, can we please talk about your alien pussy
yes,
tattoo? Because, wow, I looked at it. She because I my. My producer wrote out all these questions, and she was like, you have to see her alien tattoo. And I hadn't looked at it yet. And I mentioned it to Misha, and she's like, you got to see it.
You have to see it.
And I was like, okay. I was like, I'll go online and I'll look at the link. Cause I wasn't about to ask her to, like, get naked right now. Cause I'm a fucking professional lady. And I'm not weird like that. So I just looked up her vagina online with her sitting right here, which is not weird at all.
No, not at all.
Not for us. No. Yeah.
I like
it goes all the way down, just so people know it's not like just right above here in the pubic area. It's the entire
on the
thing.
Lips, everything.
And it's got like tentacles.
Teeth. Yeah. It's
and
a
you
one.
Got it in a very interesting way.
I did. And I actually came up with this idea because people are like, what the fuck? Where did this come from? Originally, I was like, I wanted to do tentacles of some kind. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, the octopus thing's played out. First, it was a jellyfish, but I'm like, I'm such a nerd at heart too. I'm like, oh my God, I was driving and I almost like crashed my car because I was like, it has to be a face hugger. How cool would that be? Because in the movie, it's from Alien, you know, right, so they jump on your face. And I'm like, if it's on my pussy, then I can sit there and like suck people's faces off with my pussy. So it was perfect.
Yeah.
But we ended up doing it for the live. We live streamed during COVID. The AVN Awards had a red carpet. So on the red carpet, we threw this party and it set up at the studio. There were about 15 people there and we were streaming it. And it was like a 6-hour long tattoo. And it was the most god-awful. I did a blowbang right afterwards, actually. That was nominated last year.
You're not fucking around.
I was
you were, like,
so hard
committed.
On this. I did a blowbang after doing a 6-hour long, horrifically painful pussy tattoo.
Did the blowbang help you forget the pain?
It did.
Okay, that's
good. I think
good.
My performance was actually pretty good considering that I had just done that for so long. Like, that was the last thing I wanted to do. But I was like...
Was it blowbang?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. After that, I was in so much pain.
Well, whose idea was it to do the blowbang after the tattoo?
Good question. I don't remember. It's probably mine, honestly.
You're like, I'm going to get like a really intricate like, 6-hour... Did you have... You must have had an idea of how long it would have take, right? The tattoo?
Yeah. You know, I didn't think it would be that long.
Okay.
We really didn't think it was going to be that long. But
why
I,
did it take so long? Because there's all these folds,
so much detail. The details are like there was so much detail, and
because it's
like,
on your lips too,
it's
right?
It's all the way in.
Did he have to stretch your lips out?
Yeah,
the
worst part about it was like this big tendon that runs into your from your like inner thigh up to your like hip.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, when he hit that, I was like. Like, I mean, it was worse than giving birth. Like, and I was bawling, crying. I've never really like cried during a tattoo. Like, I mean, it hurts, but you get over it. And it's usually not as long lasting, but man, there's so many nerves and stuff down there. Like, and this is a serious tattoo. It's not just like, oh, there's a palm tree. It's
no.
And like over and over with the detail. And I was numbed out and everything. And it was nothing is going to help that situation.
Dude, were they use numbing cream?
They did. And I was like sitting there baking with my little saran wrap, like, you know, getting all moist and ready to go. And I'm telling you, there's nothing in the world that could have like made that enjoyable.
How did that, did the artist like respond? Like when you were like crying, was he like,
I know he felt bad, you know, and he was like trying, he told me to, he was like trying to hurry and like, but you know, they're also like,
but it's like, if you're going to do a vagina tattoo, like, don't rush that. Don't fuck that up.
Oh, JoJo, who did it, is an incredible artist, too. I mean, it's photorealism, too. Yeah. It's not just like...
No, it's a really well-done tattoo.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. And I was so happy with how it turned out. But then I think, like, when it was done, I was so happy that it was done. And I was so stoked on it that I was like, fuck yeah, let's do a blowbang. Let's do it. Let's celebrate. Let's get it done. I was amped at that point because I'm like, thank God it's over. Like, I have all this energy now just sitting there like this for like,
you're like
6 hours.
What can I do with this energy? Blow several guys.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's just like get all, you know, celebrate, get all your fucking loads on me. Like, let's do it.
Oh my God, that is crazy.
It was crazy.
Wow.
I like tend to do crazy things, it seems like. That's a pattern.
Yeah, that's the impression I got kind of right off the bat.
Yeah, I am crazy.
So let's talk about your stroke.
I did have a stroke.
Tell us, how did that happen? What was the recovery like?
I had a blood clot that unfortunately traveled to my heart. I didn't know at the time that I had a heart condition that was previously undiagnosed. I had what they call a PFO. Mm-hmm. So it's a hole that you develop, you know, most people when they're born, we all have a hole, but it closes, it compresses shut.
I was pregnant with my daughter, that was something
really?
That they
were concerned about.
They did a fetal echo scan. And and they said same thing. They're like, it'll probably close. They usually do. And they checked her after she was born and she was fine.
See, yeah, but back then, I don't even think that technology existed. No. So like a lot of people are walking around with these things. I had no idea.
Yeah.
And so because of that, it drew the clot into my heart and shot it up into my brain. And unfortunately, that meant that I suffered a stroke. At the time, I didn't really share this information for a while, but now that it's out there, I was actually having sex at the time. And it was like the weirdest thing because I was like having sex, full blown having sex. And, you know, I'm like, you're dirty talking and whatnot. Yeah. And my voice was weird and I couldn't talk. And I was like, this is weird. And so we're like, we get done. And sure enough, like the whole side of my face is gone. I'm like, my hand tightened up. I lost all control of the right side of my body, basically. And I couldn't talk. And the guy I was with was like, are you on drugs? Because it's like, it's so shocking. Like you, yeah. And that's what like is unfortunate about strokes is that it people think it's like funny or that people are being like drunk or incapacitated, you know, drug use, whatever. When you're having a serious medical emergency happening to you. And when the news anchors are online and they stutter and those kind of things and people are like, what the fuck is going on with them? And it's like, well, they're suffering a stroke, you know. But with strokes, it's interesting because they're so subtle, though. It's not painful. Hmm. Well, to me, it wasn't. There's nothing really indicative of having a like, this is a really serious issue. It's so subtle that you could brush it off, which is what I did. I didn't think I was having a stroke. I almost thought we had Mexican food earlier in the night. And I was like, maybe I have an allergy. You know what I mean? Like something, I knew something was wrong.
Yeah. I mean, a stroke, I feel like wouldn't be the first thing that would come to mind.
No. Well, and like you Google and it's one of those times where you're like, Google this. And it says, go to the hospital immediately. You're like, get out of here.
Get out of here. Women.
Yeah. Okay. Google. Like I'm not dying from like, you know, it's actually you are, you know, I didn't go to the hospital until the next morning and I drove myself about 2.5 hours to the hospital with one hand trying to drive. And I walked into the hospital and it was COVID time. And I will never forget. I walked in and they're like, you know, why are you here? And I took my mask off and I didn't even say anything. And they started calling like stroke codes over I was like, it's not, like, do we have to really like, it cannot be that serious.
Yeah.
And it was, and I was in the hospital for about a week. I went through serious speech and physical therapy. I'm lucky, like it's a day and night difference from what it was a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. The fact that I can even talk, walk, do anything that I can do to this day is a blessing. Mm-hmm. There are some serious long-term consequences that I will have for the rest of my life. Unfortunately, I still have a speech issue a little bit, but my memory is completely obliterated. I have a really hard time remembering even just like little things, like scheduling is a nightmare. And I'm so like, I'm such a perfectionist about my brand it's so frustrating. I'll go to the airport. I did this the other day, went to the airport on the wrong day at the wrong time. Wow. And I was just crying. Cause I'm like, you know, it's just like stuff like that where it just bothers you because it's like, and I know what it's from. And it's just like, sometimes that stuff happens. And the fact that people, you know, I've recovered so well too. And people are like, oh yeah, you had a stroke. Like, you're good now. You look great. You sound great. And it's like, that's true. Thank you. You know, and I appreciate that. But it's like underneath there's so many like issues that are, I think about it constantly because I'm constantly having to deal with it and having to like almost go above and beyond what I would normally do to just try to make the appearance that everything is like normal too, in a way. It's very difficult. It's draining to do, but
Do you think that you will have these memory situation problems forever?
Probably.
Or do you think that there's no like therapy that?
Not really. They gave me a baseline. It was like a 6-month baseline. And I kept getting, when I was getting closer and closer to that, I was like, okay, my hand's getting better. My face is getting better. My, you know, speech is better. My thought processing is better. And it was like memory was just not catching up.
So basically they were saying like whatever, in 6 months from now, whatever recovery you've had at that point is pretty much where you're going to, as good as it's going to get.
Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha.
And, you know, what was weird is my year anniversary, I actually kind of regressed considerably. Like having weird kind of relapses in a sense, which is bizarre. And a lot of people, you know, I'm involved in the stroke community for advocacy and awareness. And they were telling me that's kind of how it goes. And they're like, you're a baby in this recovery. I've talked to people that have been recovering for 10, 15, 20 years. And they're like, believe me, it seems like you've gotten over the hardest part, but you're going to go through things. I've gone through serious bouts of depression, you know, inexplicably. Bizarre. And I'm not like, you know, and you're just, you have to tell yourself that these things, this is your brain, you know, it's playing a game with you. This isn't real. This isn't how you really feel. And I've wanted people to understand that, you know, even with all of this stuff, if, you know, you're tattooed or like you go to agents and they say you're not pretty enough, or, you know, I had a stroke and people question my ability to work, or, you know, they're just, your mind is playing tricks on you all the time. Like, those things should be challenges that you should face head on, and that it shouldn't scare you. It shouldn't, you know, deter you from trying to live out your dreams. Because anywhere along that line, I could have been defeated. I wanted to be, you know, in a lot of ways. When people, you know, are cruel to you or, you know, negative, or it seems like it's so defeating, think of it more as an opportunity for a challenge. Like, you shouldn't back down to those things. You should kick the door down and go for it full-fledged. And that's after the stroke. I wanted to prove that more than ever, not just to myself, but to other people that go through worse things and who don't have anybody to speak for them. I wanted to be that for someone that didn't have a voice. So
yeah,
that's the biggest, most profound purpose that I have in my life.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting that you say that, because that is something that I've definitely tried to shift my mindset towards lately. Like, I try to not look at things as problems anymore. I find that even just changing the words, you know, so instead of I have a problem, I have a challenge.
Yeah.
And everything is an opportunity to either learn about like powerlessness and letting go due to a situation, because we can't change everything, or, you know, what can I do to make changes to this situation that will make this better for me, or like, how can I look at this from a different perspective that will change it for me?
Or I think perspective has such power though, too. I mean, you can choose, I could have chosen to lay in a hospital bed and sulk and be depressed and be, I was concerned. You know, I think it's okay to acknowledge your feelings, but don't let them dictate everything, because the power of your thoughts is extremely powerful. You know, how we see ourselves or how we think about ourselves is powerful too. You know, you have the ability to do all these things, but you have to get your, like you said, even just how you use words to yourself to about situations. There's positivity in everything if you choose to find it. And it's a choice. You know, happiness is a choice. All of these things, you choose your reaction, you know, to things. And yeah, there's things, it's shitty. It sucks, you know, it's a bummer, but it's not permanent necessarily either, right? And how you react to those things, that could be permanent. If you get into a negative mindset, like you should choose to look at things positively, because there's positive things about life. And the beauty is in some of the darkest moments. The strength comes from those moments.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I'm kind of experiencing that with my father right now. I know I was on the phone with the caregivers right when you got here. And so my dad is 81 and has Parkinson's. Thank you. And he's been in the hospital for the last month. He comes home tomorrow. And what's been my biggest concern is that, like, I feel like him being trapped in the hospital, he had pneumonia and sepsis. And we've been struggling with his blood pressure, which is part of which is pretty much the reason that my husband and I moved in with my parents to help take care of him, because he was starting to fall a lot and like struggling like cognitively. But I really feel that he, you know, he's not like really walking right now. He's not really able to get out of bed. And I feel like he's kind of given up, and that's what I'm so worried about, because I feel like once you give up hope, like that's the end of it. And I just, and he is unfortunately that kind of person who I think like he kind of just gives in to the situation. He doesn't necessarily like my mom is the opposite, you know, she's faced with the challenges. She's like, I'm going to fight through this. I'm going to like she just had knee surgery. Full knee replacement.
She's like, I'm going to run.
Oh, yeah. No, she was like ignoring the fucking doctors and like, you know, just getting up and walking around the next day and all that shit, which she shouldn't have done, to be fair. Mindset. But yeah, and I just, I'm like, and I'm hoping that by bringing him home, that will help motivate him, give him like just a better place to like improve his mental health. So then maybe he'll, you know, improve a little bit and hopefully be able to, you know, walk on his own again. But, but it has really made me think about how your perspective and your mental health, like kind of creates your reality.
Yeah. It drives everything, you know? Yeah. I mean, when you mentally give up, you know, it's a ripple effect throughout your, even to your physical self. Mm-hmm. And that's why even just the thought, the start at the thought, be like, you know what? I'm not going to react to this negatively. I'm going to look at what are the positives to this? How can I use this situation to better myself and better others or be inspirational or, you know, put a smile on my face when I don't want to. Mm-hmm. Those are the hardest things to do. But if you do those things, those tiny little things, even just the thought, you start, you know, mimicking it. You mirror it. You actually, you know what? I'm smiling so much. I am actually kind of feeling happier. Mm-hmm. I am, you know, more positive person. Like if you're conscious of what, of your thoughts and what you say and how you, you know, what you do. And I think everybody needs to work on that. You know, it's not like you just woke up one day and was like, I'm going to be really positive and empathetic. Like you, but by, you know, listening to other people and then trying to be more empathetic and you open up a whole new world of peace for yourself and happiness that you can also share with others. And, you know, people, that's, it's also easier too when you deal with so much like animosity and hatred around you, you develop this sense of just like unbotheredness, like where, you know, I'm so grounded in my own, I know who I am and what I do. And I try my best to be a decent person and I'm happy and at peace. Then other people can't, you know, stir that peace as much as they try, and you can see it for what it is. And then it's like, I feel sorry for those people that haven't discovered the choice to be positive and to look at things in a positive way.
That's so incredibly true. And I know that, I mean, I think about, so a lot of people know that I'm sober and I was sober for a long period of time and then I relapsed and then I struggled to get sober again. And, you know, I never, even though I definitely felt like incredibly dark, and I felt frustrated. And there was a part of me that's like, am I ever going to like get through this and get sober again? Because it was weird. It was like, because I had already been sober, I knew what it was like on the other side.
The second time.
Yeah. Harder. Because I was like, I know how much better it is when I get over this hump.
Yeah.
I know what the other side looks
in
like.
In your mind, it's like, it's deeper this time. The hooks are, it's I've done the same thing.
So it was, you know, but I never lost hope because I was just like, the minute I lose hope, then it's fucking over. And I know it. And I remember my sponsor made me do gratitude lists. And I was like, this is the stupidest shit I've ever fucking done. I don't feel grateful at all. But I had to write a gratitude, 10 things every day that I was grateful for. It doesn't matter. It could be the food to eat, roof over your head. Like, we all have something to be grateful for. And I would send it to her. And what it did was exactly what you said. It started to create that process of change, but it was slow. Mm-hmm. And if you look at like the way that the brain works, like on a neurological level, which I know you know about, like we create these pathways in our brain, like these grooves where our thoughts will automatically go because we have those thoughts all the time. So if you're always having negative thoughts, you're gonna create these deeper and deeper pathways of negative thoughts. So you automatically go there. But if you start redirecting your thoughts down that, you know, untrodden path and you start like, forcing yourself to go that way more, then that pathway starts to become deeper and the other ones start to deteriorate a little bit.
And it takes over.
And then one day you'll find that you automatically suddenly your reaction is become different. And then your perspective changes and then everything's different.
That's a beautiful realization too. Like it really is. That's what I encourage. Like I hope people just even try it. I actually do gratitude lists with my son every day and every night before I go to bed. Multiple times a day I'll be driving and I'll just be like conscious to like to be thankful for things, or like if I lose something and find it, I'm so grateful to like, you know, things little things. Being grateful is a wonderful gift that you can give yourself and give to other people also, you know. And that's being that type of a person. is wonderful. You know, I mean, what's wrong with being like a positive, positive human being? Because you can choose to be two things in this world. And it's like, why would you want to be somebody that's just riddled with hate and anger and inflicting that pain and anger and hatred onto other people?
Yeah, because it's hurt people.
You hurt people. And but why choose to do that? Because it is ultimately a choice. Everyone has issues. Everyone deals with hurt and pain and challenges and difficulties and far worse things than you and I will ever imagine potentially, you know? But dealing with them is definitive of your character and therefore your impact on other people in your life, your loved ones, and just people in general. So
for you, who's been through so much, you know, who's been through a stroke, and I know also like you have a son with disabilities, which has got to be really difficult for you. What do you find yourself grateful for?
You know, I'm grateful for the opportunity to even just be sitting here having this conversation, honestly. I've always said that I went through a period in my life where you have like checkpoints, kind of. The first one was when my son was born and finding out that he had cerebral palsy. That was a truly humbling experience.
Yeah.
Devastating to me at first, I'll say that. Because you hear something like that, a diagnosis like that, and the lack of compassion that doctors have, or we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
Like when they just deliver something like that to, I'm a single mother, you know, sitting there by myself, and they just casually come in and say something like that. It's like, what? And in my mind, I had no idea what cerebral palsy was, much like I didn't know what stroke was or signs or symptoms.
How old was he when he got the diagnosis?
He was only 3 months old, which I'm grateful for that too, because he was diagnosed so early. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't know that babies, like, you know, are supposed to use both hands laterally, you know, like I thought he was just right hand dominant. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't acknowledge or use his left side of his body at all. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea that that was an indicator that he had CP. He had a neck thing, the torticollis. So their necks kind of get kinked sometimes. Really simple, you know, cosmetic thing. Excuse me. And a physical therapist came in, worked out his neck, and she noticed it. You know, so for those things, like those moments, I'm grateful for, because I was devastated by that.
Yeah.
I thought his life was over, you know, like he's never going to play football. He's never going to have a normal life, you know. Yeah. And I wanted him to have a chance at a normal life. And I realized more and more that he's a gift.
Yeah.
You know. So
how old is he now?
He's almost six.
Oh, wow.
He'll be six in December. You're going to make me cry, too.
Well, you're making me cry, so it's too fucking late.
I know. It's true, because it, like, you know, he, I really, the world is so cruel, and, like, I was bullied most of my life. Still am to this day. You know, we are still.
Yeah.
But that's what I wanted for him, was not to have that.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that's all I thought about.
Yeah.
Was everyone's going to be cruel to him and all these things, but that's why it's so important to me that he knows who he is.
Yeah.
And that he's a wonderful human, and not to dim, he's such a sweet little boy. Mm-hmm. Like, not to dim his light and his, you know, his purpose in this world. And, you know, and doing so, showing him what strength looks like, but what compassion looks like also. Yeah. And it's difficult to deal with. And, you know, we went through, I've gone years and years of intensive physical. They didn't think he was going to walk at one point. You know, he had walkers and all of these surgeries. He had an MRI, sedated MRI when he was 6 months old. And I couldn't tell you how sick I was the entire time. You know, it felt like a year just sitting there waiting, and this tiny little baby, you know, going in. And it's challenging, but I really believe that was the checkpoint too, where it humbled me, but it also made me grateful.
Yeah.
And grateful that it wasn't something worse.
Yeah.
You know, he's, why am I, you know, being self-loathing here? Or, you know, why do I have to look at him even differently?
Yeah.
That's a societal thing, you know, that I bought into.
Right.
You know, why does he have to? Why couldn't he play football? You know, why couldn't he do these things? He can do anything he wants to do.
Yeah.
And so I encouraged that. But that was, you know, it's a wake-up call to me, too, to change my perspective on life and other people, and to have more empathy and compassion for others. And, you know, that really pushed me to be that way and to try to, you know, live my life that way and teach him to be that way, because it's such a more beautiful life. And, you know, there are obviously painful moments and challenges, but being able to deal with them and look at them in a beautiful way, and not that it's the end of the world or negative, it brings you peace.
Yeah.
It truly does.
How's he doing now?
He's so good. He's just darling. Yeah. He's in preschool. He's sassy. Man, I'm like, what? Where did these things come from? Like, what did you just say to me? It's amazing. His emotional intelligence is just incredible. He's just a sweet little boy.
I can imagine.
Oh, he's just inherently sweet. And I love that about him. And I look at other kids, like, and I don't have anything against other people's kids, but sometimes I'm just like, he really is like a little gem, you know, in ways that I don't think he would be.
Yeah.
If he was quote unquote normal, you know,
right.
Or, you know, didn't have the disability, but he's a wonderful little guy. So I hope that he maintains that throughout his life. And I've been including him in wrestling and YouTube and stuff that I do too, which people frown upon. But I'm also like, you know, he's going to be in a position where people are going to be cruel to him because of what I do for a living. He's already got two strikes against him now. Mom does porn and I have CP. I want to elevate him in, you know, in ways that are appropriate and respectful to him, but also like, I want him to have an enjoyable life and know that, you know, everything somebody says about me, it's because they're miserable human beings themselves.
Right.
And, you know, they're not open, or they're not, you know, they're not secure enough within themselves, or for whatever reason it is, they're judgmental. And be like, that's okay that those people have those feelings. Don't let it hurt you.
Yeah.
Don't let it impact you.
Yeah.
Because that was the biggest loss, I think, is when people try to take away your spirit and everything that is good about you, because they're so cruel and evil. So don't let them. And I want to teach him that. I wish someone taught me that at that age. I want him to know, like, people can say whatever they want about you.
Yeah.
They can't take away who you are.
Yeah. I mean, it's incredible that you've been through so much and you've faced so many challenges and you come out of this. I mean, you could have gone the other way, right? You could 100%. Be angry. You could be bitter. You could be those people that you know, you talk about trying to take away other people's light, and you haven't.
No.
You've come out on the other side like a stronger woman, and I think like an incredible role model for so many people. So thank you.
I appreciate you. You're a role model of mine too, so that means a lot to me. As we cry here together, I'm so sorry.
Yeah. No, it's okay, man. I've had several podcasts that I've cried on.
Oh God, I know. It's like
I'm gonna have to start bringing tissues. Yeah.
No, that's you know, it's good, right?
Crying, Holly Randall crying.
That's right. Well, YouTube me. It's just what's Misha crying about now. Like, yeah, there it is. Misha crying in 50 different videos. Perfect. Never used to do that before the stroke, by the way. Like, I could contain it more.
Yeah.
Now it's just like I have no emotional situation whatsoever. It's like, okay, here it comes.
Well, I think it's a good thing. I think, you know, I mean, we're all holding so much inside.
True.
Sometimes you just gotta like
let
that
out.
Just
need to be, and share it with, because we're human.
Yeah.
Too, you know, exactly. Like, that's why I have no problem with it. I used to be like, oh my God, no. But it's like, you know, we're humans. We have emotions and the right to be emotional or passionate about, you know, and that's the thing too. It's like, not necessarily crying because we're sad. It's like, because it just means so much, you know, and it's like so impactful, and it can even be joy, but it's like, it doesn't have to be a sad or negative thing either. Yeah. Like, it's just expressive. So I think it's a beautiful thing. Let it go.
All you know, I mean, look at you. You're a multifaceted woman. Oh, you can cry on a podcast about your son who you love so much, and then you can go in a death match and get hit in the head with a fucking like
light tube.
And that's just what being Misha Montana is all about.
That's it right there. In a nutshell, that's literally it. That is it. Nail on the head. Not in my head.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. This has been a really, truly enjoyable conversation.
So wonderful.
I'm really glad.
Me too. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. Anytime. Can you let everybody know where they can find you online?
Yes, of course. You can find me on my website, MishaMontana.com, OnlyFans.com/MishaMontana, and all socials except TikTok, the Misha Montana.
Fantastic.
Twitter and Instagram.
Fantastic. And you guys can find me at Holly Randall on Instagram and on Twitter. And of course, if you want to support this podcast, go to patreon.com/HollyRandallUnfiltered. If you're watching this on YouTube, like and subscribe, please. It would mean a lot to me. I just hit 200,000 subscribers, which
Congrats.
Thank you. So, you know, I'm looking to hit that million one day.
Oh, it's coming, baby. It's coming.
So thank you guys so much for watching. I will see you next week. Thank you so much for listening. If you love my show and want to support it, I ask that you take the time to rate and review my podcast. Now, if you're not sure how to do that, you can go to ratethispodcast.com/HRU and you'll automatically be directed to the various podcast apps your device supports and then be led to the place where you can rate my show. 5 stars, of course, and leave your glowing review. Okay, it doesn't have to be glowing, but you know, say something nice. You can also financially support this show through my Patreon by visiting patreon.com/HollyRandallUnfiltered, where you get so many perks for your support. Things such as early releases and live recordings of my interviews, merchandise such as stickers, mugs, and hoodies, autographed copies of my photography books, free access to my private Snapchat and not safe for work website, hollyrandall.com, and my bonus podcast, My LA Porn Life. Also, join my Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/HollyRandallUnfiltered, and you can watch the video versions of these interviews at youtube.com/HollyRandallUnfiltered. Oh, and of course, sign up for my newsletter at hollyrandallunfiltered.com and get all the info on upcoming guests and special projects. Again, thank you so much from the bottom of my heart for supporting my podcast in whatever way that you can.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.